Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.
Fueled by Frank and Honest Gourmet Coffee. The perfect blend to kickstart your day. Barista quality coffee available at Centra and Supervalue.
We need to talk about this. Mindfulness, okay? It's used in schools. It's used in workplaces to solve anxiety, to ease stress, and even, you know, increase productivity. But there is no one size fits all for your brain. But what if it doesn't work for you and actually adds to your stress? Well, neuroscientist Brian Penny is on the line now to talk about just that. Brian, good morning.
Good morning, Jen. Thanks for having me back.
Great to have you back. Now, you're always banging on about the benefits of mindfulness.
I am.
How does it help you personally?
Personally, wow, lots of different ways. Well, here, I'll give you a great example. Every time I come on your radio show, like I've done this a lot. I do my own radio work and stuff like that as well, but I still get nervous. Like I can still feel the anxiety. Mm. I can still feel the nerves. So a couple of minutes ago, like I was taking a couple of deep, mindful breaths and I feel very calm now. So like just a couple of minutes ago, it really, really helped me. But one of the things, and I think we could really touch on this today, where it helps me is it helps me to create a detachment from difficult emotions like anxiety, like anger and stuff like that as well. But mindfulness doesn't choose. If you practice that on a regular basis, it doesn't choose which emotions. It kind of creates a detachment from all emotions when you do it on a regular basis. So that's where some of the challenges can come in as well. Mm. But it definitely helps me with anxiety, stress and all of those things as well, and focus and concentration.
Do you ever just sit down and start and then get a feeling that it's not going to work today?
Yeah, very much so, oh. Jen. Definitely for me. I'm innately impulsive, and I had a lot of trauma in me childhood as well, infant trauma with bodily sensations. So my whole addiction, I was in addiction for years. Mm. If anyone's listening, they don't know, and that was driven by anxiety and bodily sensations. So mindfulness hasn't been this like magic wand for me where all of a sudden I'm all zen and I feel at peace all the time. I still have a sense of agitation underlying that. And I don't think I'll ever really get rid of that. And some days I'm like, oh, I don't think I can do a mindfulness exercise today. I just feel too agitated. Now, maybe I should sit with that even more in that context. But sometimes I just say, no, today it's not for me. And I won't do it.
Okay. That's interesting. I've never heard you say that before. Why is it important who we learn mindfulness from?
Wow, that's huge. That is absolutely huge. And I think that there's a saying that goes out there, like it was brought into the corporate industry in a couple of years ago in terms of like improved concentration, improved focus and productivity. And it definitely enhances them qualities. There's research out there that shows enhances areas of structures of the brain that shows that it's excellent for that. But a key component of mindfulness is compassion and being compassionate with yourself. So if you're trying to practice mindfulness, let's say a simple breath meditation, and the mind will wander and you're bringing it back. But if you're kicking yourself and you're saying, the inner critic kicks in, I'm crap at mindfulness, it's not working for me. That's not how it works. You need to be compassionate and kind to yourself. So there's this element of mindfulness, like it's paying attention in the moment, on purpose, but in a non-judgmental manner. And if you only grab certain components of mindfulness and you haven't got a good teacher, really, you might miss certain elements of it. And I fundamentally believe that if taught properly, mindfulness will help everyone in some way. It's not for everyone, but it will help everyone in some way. But how it's taught and whether you read a little bit about it and you start practicing it and getting off to a bad start, that can be a huge problem. So who teaches it and their knowledge around it is really important.
How do you find a good teacher? How do you know if they're the right one? Because I'd say if you find someone who's not right for you, it might put you off.
Yeah, definitely. I've been very lucky. I know a couple of great people. I taught on the course. I teach the neuroscience of mindfulness in University College Dublin. And there's a guy on the course there. His name is Barry Costello. And he worked in the Rutland Centre as well for years. He does a lot of mindfulness-based relapse prevention work. So as part of my PhD, Barry worked with me. So he teaches like he's an official mindfulness instructor. He's gone through. He has the certificates for it as well. And anyone that goes through the master's course in UCD, and I'm sure there's other courses out there, but the 2-year master's course in UCD is brilliant. And like it's 2 years of mindfulness. Yeah. And it puts people through the program of mindfulness themselves, so they've experienced it and they can actually teach it as well. So look at the certs and make sure they're accredited in the right way.
We need to talk about this because you talked about it coming into places of work and schools and companies teaching this to groups of people. Are there risks with them doing that to masses of people?
Yeah, definitely. And I'll bring it back to my own experience as well, Jen. When I first started practicing mindfulness, I was introduced to mindfulness years ago. My childhood trauma, I was afraid of my heartbeat, my breath and my pulse. Like, scary things to be afraid of because you can't get away from them. And when I was forced to told to do it, to practice a mindfulness exercise, I was in a detox facility. He says, focus on your breath. I was saying, I'm afraid of my breath. I can't focus on my breath. Now, I found another avenue through focusing on my nostrils, and it kind of works. So that's kind of a long story. But the bottom line is I had trauma around my breath. So if anyone has experienced some kind of trauma, and it doesn't have to be like PTSD, it doesn't have to be going to war or anything like that. Like, trauma is relative. And if somebody is telling you to focus on certain areas of your body and you have trauma around that, it could potentially make it worse. So if you're doing that in a group environment, especially with kids, the teacher or the mindfulness teacher doesn't know the individual history of those kids as well. So there can be dangers around that as well. And there has been stories of it causing panic attacks and stuff like that because it wasn't done in the right manner in that context.
Gotcha. Now, we need to talk about detachment, because detachment from your own self is a big factor in mindfulness. Why is that not a good idea for some people?
Right. So the big one is, so it's great if you're detaching from your stressful and anxious self. But I came across a study a couple of years ago and I thought it was fascinating. And it was shown mindfulness studies in prisons. And what I was doing is, and this, it's not just for prisons, it could be people that are narcissistic as well. But if you've done things in the past that aren't good and you should be showing remorse and you should be showing emotions and helping you to connect with compassion and empathy for the crimes that you committed. Well, if you are creating that detachment from self and that detachment from emotions, well, remorse is a really important factor in that. So what the research showed was that people that had committed crimes weren't feeling the full extent of the crimes that they committed. So maybe they should be feeling a bit of shame. And that's a difficult one as well. Mm-hmm. I think remorse is the word there. But if that's being removed, then you're not feeling the full extent of the actions that you're being punished for. So I thought that was a fascinating study around that. And it applies to people that are just narcissistic as well. If they're consistently practicing mindfulness and are detached from the difficult emotions that they should be experiencing with that behavior, well, that becomes a problem. It allows them to do that a little bit more.
Here's another thing that kind of floored me. Up to 25% of people who have practiced mindful meditation have reported negative experiences. Why do you think that is?
I think it would come back down to the trauma, and as I said, trauma is relative, so it doesn't necessarily have to be trauma. We all think of trauma as in like sexual abuse, car crashes and stuff like that. But if you're just like, think of the world today, like we're constantly being bombarded by messages, social media, COVID-19, especially at the minute, like we're all at high levels of anxiety and high levels of stress. So if you're asked to focus inwardly in your body on them, you're going to experience those bodily sensations. They're going to be enhanced in that moment. So it's not surprising for me. Now, if you sit with those difficult emotions for a while through a mindful practice, they will dissipate. And that is one of the massive benefits of the practice. But you can go in the opposite direction. And it's obviously for 25% of people, they could be getting a little bit panicked by that. And instead of sitting with the emotions, their brain goes into overdrive and it increases the anxiety. I would imagine that's where the majority of that is coming from.
And if they're feeling like that, should they abandon it or should they keep trying? What would you say?
Yeah, it's difficult and it's really individual. What I would say, mindfulness will work for everybody, but it's not for everybody. So there's so many elements of that. Like, some people just won't believe in it. Some people just are afraid of it. I think it would really depend on the individual. But what I would say, if they did stick with it, and I do believe, I don't like universals because I don't think everything works for everybody. I don't like universals. But if somebody with the right practice and the right teacher were to stick with mindfulness, even if they had difficult emotions and difficult traumatic experiences, they will see massive benefits for it over time. But consistency is the key with that. And if you have experienced some kind of trauma and you are feeling negative effects, I would reach out to somebody, a professional, and ask them for help. I wouldn't just sit with it on your own and try to push through the barrier, because that could be quite dangerous.
How many different types of mindfulness meditations are there out there? Are we talking like in the hundreds?
Yeah, definitely. Sure. Like a walk in the park is a mindful walk in the park, isn't it? So there's elements. Yeah, there's elements like that as well. But there's a couple of mainstays, like breath meditation is the big one. Breath mindfulness. And I once heard, like, you're born with a breath and you die with a breath. It must be important. So the breath is the best anchor. But then there's like visualization mindfulness, loving kindness mindfulness, where you're just being loving to yourself and to other people, and it helps to enhance connection and stuff like that. There's labeling mindfulness, self-observation mindfulness. So there's some great apps out there as well. If anyone's interested in practicing mindfulness and are listening to this, Insight Timer is a fantastic app with millions of free meditations. And then Headspace is another great app. Now, that costs a few quid. I think it's like a tenner a month or something like that. But it's brilliant. And it really simplifies mindfulness and goes into the 8 main practices through mindfulness as well, if you really want to dig in and learn a little bit more about it.
That's interesting, because when I started trying to get into it, I was almost too conscious of my breath. And when I get stressed, I kind of panic with my breath. So focusing on my breath made it actually worse for me. But these apps, like you said, like Insight Timer and all these, they've all different, like there's visualization, I suppose I could try, or all these different types of meditation to calm my nerves. that would be definitely. Probably would suit me better. So it's really, I mean, it's interesting what you said there. You're not into universal. It's never one size fits all, I suppose, is the main message with mindfulness and meditation. And if anybody's listening and they're starting to get into it for the first time, is there anything else you'd say to them?
Baby steps. And I say that with everything. I remember hearing about mindfulness one time, there's the mindfulness gurus out there that you say you have to do 20 minutes a day and you have to do the proper practices. But I think you have to be more pragmatic, and whatever works. Like, start with a song that you like for 3 minutes and listen to the song and focus on your breath if you find it difficult. And if something works, stick with it. But don't set these big goals for yourself, because you'll become demotivated with that as well. So 2 or 3 minutes, start with that. And something that I'm always banging on again about as well is like habit stacking the habit, and micro meditations, like, so mindfully brush your teeth, mindfully wash your hands, mindfully drink a cup of coffee. And for me, like, I couldn't do breath meditation, and I started through my nostril and stuff like that, but I can sit with my breath most days and today, and I can sit with my heartbeat, and that's been true and practices over time, but it was baby steps for me. So that's the big thing that I'd put across to people.
Amazing. Brian Penny, author and neuroscientist, thank you so much for joining me again today. Best of luck with everything. We'll chat in a couple of weeks.
Super. Thanks,
Brian. Bye. Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.